What, you dare me
what,
to make
you,
it about
you dare
feminism?
Me to make it about
feminism?
Because I can make it about
because
feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
You are now listening you to the are Feminist now listening Bar podcast. To the Feminist Bar podcast.
What is good? What is poppin'? Welcome to the Feminist Bar Podcast with your host, Tinatswemaka, aka, for this particular episode, a heavy critique of feminist spaces and intersectionality. Welcome to the Feminist Bar with your host, Tina. Thank you so much for joining me. I am here today to make a very interesting and exciting episode. I am fresh off the plane from Kigali, Rwanda, where I was attending Women Deliver 2023 in my capacity as a feminist and LGBTQIA+ activist from Africa, as well as a panel speaker at one of the side events on global feminist action on LGBTQIA+ rights. So I had to open the episode that way because context is needed. And we're going to be talking about Women Deliver today, the good, the bad, the ugly, my personal experience, the experience of the people that I got to interact with, and maybe hopefully in the end some people can speak for themselves. So like, we're just gonna get right into it. Since this is after all an individual episode, it felt as though having a guest might make the episode a lot longer than I would like for it to be. So yeah, let's get into it. Let's fucking talk about it, right? So Women Deliver was happening from the 17th to the 21st. The pre-conferences were happening, I think, on the 15th and the 16th in Kigali. And let's just talk about how this started. Let's talk about it right from the beginning, how it went on arrival, everything. So Women Deliver announced that the next one, which was this one, would be in Kigali sometime last year. So for your own information, this is the largest convening of gender and development professionals, and it happens every 4 years. So I think the previous one might have been in Vancouver, and I think there might have been one that was in London. Not really sure, but yeah, this one was in Kigali. So last year, around September, October, they put out a call for activists, for youth, for people who could attend on a general scholarship, on media scholarship, content scholarships. I was on a general scholarship, just had to fill out a couple of things, some essay questions about the work that we're doing in our region, some of the biggest achievements, and some of the ways that we're going to share about Women Deliver after this is done. And I actually did mention in my application that recording a podcast episode is something that I was going to do. So here we are. Let's start with the good. Shout out to WD 2023 for the logistics, okay? Let me tell you something. I am an anxious traveler. I hate to go to places where things are not planned, where things are not well thought out, where I'm not 100% sure if someone is going to be picking me up at the airport. But there was not a doubt in the world the minute that you landed in Kigali that Women Deliver was going on. It was plastered all over the airport. There were helpers all over the airport, assistants to take you from place to place. There was an information desk immediately outside of the airport where you could sit around, where your bags could be safe. I even went to the bathroom and left my bags in there. And the shuttles would come and collect you from there straight to your hotel, to your accommodation, whatever. And there were shuttles throughout the week. I know that there were some complaints about some shuttles not arriving in time, the amount of time it took for shuttles to go from like one arena or one venue to like the next. Yes, that could possibly be improved in terms of maybe designating certain buses to have certain routes, which I think that's how it was supposed to work. But other than that, like, shout out to that. The accommodation was good. It was comfortable as well. I think that also had a lot to do with generally the hospitality in Rwanda. So That was awesome. That was amazing. Let's take it to the next day. On the 16th and the 17th, these were the days for the pre-conferences and the welcome ceremony. So specifically on the 16th, it was pre-conferences. I actually attended one, and this is a little bit of what I want to talk about regarding the pre-conferences, but not so much to say that this is Women Deliver's responsibility, because I don't know how that works. So on the 16th, I attended a pre-conference by the UNFPA, which was on linking maternal deaths to service delivery and sexual reproductive health rights and safe abortion all over the world. And yeah, that's what it was about. The session was probably about 60%, 70% panels and 30% plenary. You know, it was okay. I'm speaking from my own perspective. I think it probably would have been a little bit more valuable to someone at a higher level of nonprofit work. So here is how it was working with the pre-conferences. With the pre-conferences, I think they had been announced maybe a week or two before Women Deliver to say, hey, these are the pre-conferences that are going on. You are free to like register, but like don't take your registration as a confirmation of attendance. Like, we will reach out to you like if you've made the cut for the pre-conference, right? So this was the first thing. So initially when I actually applied for this pre-conference, I was rejected following it, which I sent an email asking why, because I really wanted to understand. This is actually why I'm sharing this with you. And they shared with me, the people from UNFPA, that because they had limited spaces in the pre-conferences, they were kind of doing it by selection, and that they wanted a good balance of people from government, civil society, activists, blah, 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 blah. So this is particularly interesting to me, because if there was so much time and so much intention around who was in the room, then why were there no young people in the room, right? And why were there no activists in the room? So I think we did have in that pre-conference maybe one or two activists that spoke, but in general, it was a very older space. And I think that was even addressed in the panel itself to say, oh, like there's not a lot of young people here. So I'll attribute that to like two things. Huh? Because I'm a forgiving person with nuance. First things first, the Girls Deliver conference was happening at the same time. So this was kind of like the youth section of Women Deliver, right? First things first. Secondly, again, like this picking thing, because if you're selecting people, is that to say that there are no young people that were interested in attending? Because I myself am considered a young person, and I was initially rejected from this space. I don't know. So I think that is something that could have been better. And I'm saying this with the context of having then also attended a lot of other things throughout the week that had very low representation of young people. So I completely see the value in having a youth deliver section where the youth get to have their own powerful conversations that are incredibly relevant to them. But I like to believe that grassroots workers, activists, and youth are relevant in every single space, because that is how you're going to make it an intersectional space, right? That's where we're going to get all the information that we need to get. So that is what was happening at the pre-conferences. From just a general perspective, which is my own personal, very personal perspective of it, it felt like everyone was in competition to like network, right? And this also just kind of ended up being an ongoing theme throughout the week, that the more intimate spaces were the better spaces to be in, because you're meeting people from a place of authenticity, and really they want to hear exactly what you work on, and you want to hear what they work on, and you actually care about what they have to say. But a lot of these spaces, maybe it's because of the presence of so many high-level people, just turned out to kind of be like, mind my language, dick swing contests. Because if you're in a plenary session and you are asked to, you know, take the mic and say your piece, why would you spend 30 minutes introducing yourself, the work that you've done in presenting your CV, and then like 30 seconds asking your question and addressing what is actually happening in the plenary? So I find that maybe that is more of like an international conference norm, and that everyone is just trying to get as much as they can from this space. And as a result of that, like a lot of things end up just being missed, or a lot of things end up being superficial. So yeah, that was my experience of the pre-conference. In fact, I was so knackered after this pre-conference that I didn't attend the next one, which was also by UNFPA, because I kind of got a gist of what their spaces might be like. And I was not really interested in experiencing that again. So let's go to the next day, which is where a lot of the tea is coming from, a lot of the criticism is coming from. On the 17th, this was the day of the welcome ceremony. So, I mean, let's talk about the welcome ceremony a bit. I'll say shout out to the welcome ceremony in that it was the only event that really allowed you to appreciate how many people were in this space, how many, I'm not going to say feminists, because apparently not everyone there identifies as a feminist. Crazy. But yeah, it was a huge event. It was breathtaking, actually, to see what the arena looked like. For those of you who might be interested in actually seeing the video content around what this conference might have been like, you can go ahead and follow me on TikTok, where I literally did daily vlogs of every single day that I was there, including the day that I spoke on a panel. And my TikTok is at Tina Tsue. I will actually put a link in the episode notes for you who want to see it. So the welcome ceremony was interesting in that, first of all, I was sitting at the back and I couldn't hear a damn thing, okay? The only thing I could hear was the overwhelming claps of people clapping for people that they should not have been clapping for. Okay, so first up, we had the Senegalese president as one of the welcome ceremony speakers. And kind of just a huge middle finger, because for those of you who don't know, Senegal is a war zone right now, right? It's not a place that is safe for queer people or for women, and this is done by someone, right? And I think something that's very interesting, even outside of this Women Deliver conversation, is the hesitance that we have, even in nonprofit spaces, to say, this is the problem, let's eliminate the problem, or let's not work with the problem, right? Like, people are afraid to say, well, it's so-and-so's fault because so-and-so is in charge. It's more of, well, security systems, peace and security. No, let's name the problem, right? Let's name the problem so that we can avoid it. And if we name the problem in this particular instant, we never would have had the Senegalese president as one of the speakers, because why would a man be there? Why would a man be there? So it was a huge FU. And this is something that had been previously addressed by a lot of African feminists, a lot of African organizations had put out statements on this even prior to Women Deliver beginning, because I think that they announced the speakers a good 3 weeks to a month before. Anyway, it fell onto like absolute silence because no one did anything about it. Up next, we had the Hungarian president. I'm sorry, you're just gonna have to excuse me, because at this point, the jokes are writing themselves. The jokes took a pen and a notebook, they sat down on the desk, and they started to write themselves. See, this is a woman who is anti-queer, anti-sexual reproductive health rights, anti-abortion, who has openly spoken about the fact that women need to spend more time at home, more time being homemakers, that they need to be paid less because they are less valuable in the workplace, that they simply do not bring as much as men bring to the table. And I am really fucking curious about the thought process that went behind having this woman as one of the welcome ceremony speakers. Like, who put up their hand in the WD meeting and said, you know what, I think this is a good person, and they did all of the due diligence between sending the emails, confirming her attendance, inviting her, purchasing her ticket. And all of this time, not one single person thought to say, boss, maybe, that didn't happen because she was there. So, I mean, there's been a lot of speculation around who had the power and who did not have the power in the organizing of this conference, because there were a lot of sponsors, a lot of international sponsors, a lot of sponsors with a lot of money, a lot of people included that have a lot of political power, a lot of negotiating power, who have most of the power in any room that they walk in. So again, we're really not sure how this even came to be. But what was specifically interesting about this is, when all of the complaints were made about the Senegalese president, again, nothing was said and nothing was addressed. However, a day after the welcome ceremony, there were a bunch of European women that were attending Women Deliver that decided to sign a petition around this, and immediately a statement was released. And to say it plainly as it is, this is very in line with the racial inequalities that have always been associated with Women Deliver, in that Black women and African people complain for a while, a long while, right, about the presence and attendance of the Senegalese president, and they are immediately ignored. White women make a petition for one day, and immediately, it is immediately signed, and the statement is immediately released. Here are a couple of reasons why I call bullshit on the statement. Because you say that, oh, like, our values are not in alignment with this president's views, and, you know, we don't subscribe to that. We are super inclusive. Okay, but why is she at your welcome ceremony? Why is she at your welcome ceremony? I'll wait. So, yeah, that was a big no-no. And hopefully, I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen next time. Again, considering the fact that we don't know the processes around who is selected and why they're selected, we can't really confidently say that this will never happen again. But again, it speaks volumes. So let's just kind of move on to the next thing, because there's not a lot more that could be said about this. Let's talk about the content of Women Deliver itself between the 17th and the 21st of July. I am someone who was very committed to attending as many things as I could, currently working on sexual reproductive health rights, very specifically unrestricted safe abortion in Zimbabwe, safety and security of LGBTQIA+ persons, the creation of safe spaces, community care, and mutual aid. None of these are my, I haven't said these in any particular order. All of these are my babies that I love and I cherish and I work on with so much passion. So working on all of these things, I tried to attend as many sessions that were relevant to this as possible. And here is what I have to say in general about the sessions. I loved that there were sessions that brought together funders and grantees. I will say, like, a huge shout out to, I think it was the Equality Fund session that was on funding feminist movements, where they put together people in foreign policy, people in grassroots, people in funding, and people in urgent funding. And we were just swapping around tables, having these different conversations about how we can improve the quality and the quantity of funding that's going into feminist movements. I really, really enjoyed that. I love that a lot. I'll also say that shout out to the panels that were on SRHR, because there were so many of them. So they were addressing things from so many different perspectives, right? Super useful. Let's get into some of the things that could have been better, right? So again, having attended a plethora of sessions, probably like 2 or 3 per day in all the times that I was there, I would say that there was a lack of representation of LGBTQIA+ persons. And I think that there is a tendency within other facets of feminist practice, be it sexual reproductive health rights, gender-based violence, digital rights in tech, there is a tendency to not include queer persons as much, and there is a tendency to kind of designate them to the gay rights section of things, which, if you attended and if you're a queer person listening to this, you already know, I already know, that there were not enough queer sessions going on and there was just not enough representation, period. So I would say that that is something that could be improved. I did hear some feedback, which I'm about to get into, from queer persons, because we did have an opportunity to convene, though it was a limited time, we did. And we spoke about some of the problems and issues that we had. So let's talk about more about this representation issue, right? So in total, there were 3 LGBTQIA+ safe spaces. There was one on SRHR research and sexual minorities. There were 2, I think, separate ones that were specifically on the rights of intersex people. And I think one of those two was combined with something else. And then there was an LGBTQIA+ solidarity space. So in total, that makes 4 queer events in a period of like 5 days and I don't know how many sessions, so many. I'm guessing that's probably less than 5% of the sessions altogether. So let's get into the LGBTQIA plus safe space that I attended. I attended this space and it was like one of the best sessions I attended. All of the best sessions I attended were queer spaces, of course. And I learned some pretty disturbing things about this space. The first things first was those same-sex relations are not criminalized in Rwanda. It is incredibly taboo. So something that was going on was that queer people were arriving with their partners at the hotels and literally being told that people of the same sex cannot share a hotel room. In an instance where one of these incidences was escalated, they did call someone from WD to come and de-escalate the situation and help. And unfortunately, she arrived there and gaslit and guilt-tripped the people who were experiencing this homophobic attack. Unfortunately. So you're probably asking, well, this is Rwanda. What are the people at Women Deliver supposed to do? No one is really in charge. I think there's something that could have been done, right? I think that a failure to do something shows that there was not a sufficient and intentional safety and security protocol that was made for LGBTQIA plus persons, which if you're going to be mobilizing and organizing in Africa, that is something that you're just going to have to do. Whether that looks like designating only a specific handful of hotels and accommodations that you know queer people are not going to have a problem, or getting to a place and reaffirming that this is an international conference and Rwanda as a country that has positioned itself as conference central should not be discriminating on people on this basis. First things first, okay? Let's just get that completely out of the way. It's so inappropriate to be the facilitator and the organizer of something and not be able to offer comfort and solutions to the people who are looking to you when they are now in this space, period. Second thing, there were a couple of bathroom incidents. So this is gender non-conforming people, non-binary people, mask-presenting lesbians being harassed in the bathroom by women. And I, you know what, I'm just going to say it as it is, as someone who heard all three accounts of this in person. These were white women. Like, why are there Karens at women? Why are there Karens at Women Deliver? And you know what, just to address the Karens thing, like, when we were leaving the welcome ceremony, there were like so many like white women that were red in the face yelling at the bus, like drivers, at the bus organizers, just like straight up berating people in front of everyone. And I just think that's completely fucking unacceptable. It's completely unacceptable. It is completely unacceptable. And to hear that they're taking this racial oppression all the way from the shuttles into the spaces, all the way to the bathroom. No. And I'm sure that these are not experiences that are going to be mainstreamed, because who knows if these are things that are going to be further discussed. And that's why I'm here, honestly. And I'm not sure who exactly is going to be listening to this. I'm not sure exactly what the reaction is going to be, but I only speak from a place of truth. And there is no amount of like money or scholarship or influence or political power that should push any of us to speak fondly on spaces where intersectionality is not valued, right? Because let's move on from the queer people for a second. There were also a few testimonies from disabled folk, and they were talking about lack of accessibility, lack of representation, inability to move around. Some of the ramps were so steep, it was like, was this ramp put here for someone to really be able to access the building? Or was it put here so that it could be said that there were ramps to access the building, right? So that like inclusivity and that representation is important if you don't want to make people out to be tokens, right? I can only hope that the message that I'm putting across is actually received and considered. Because again, I am a queer African woman who is speaking from Africa, and we already have seen that that is not incredibly valued. So that's something about the treatment of queer people and disabled folk at this space. Let's just move right on, right? Most of these things speak for themselves. There's no need to heavily discourse about it. I am just here to provide a summary of exactly what happened. So let's talk about some of the biggest takeaways for me. Some of them I'm going to be repeating because I've already mentioned them a little earlier on in this episode. But first things first is how valuable intimate spaces can be. And that is where all of the conversations that matter happen. That is where all of the follow-through happens. That is where all of the feelings are felt. And that is where the spaces are really led with love. And I'm not saying that international organizations are not leading with love, because I myself, in my full-time job, am employed by an international organization. But I think there is less care with the way that people are treated, and there's a lot of value into, like, what are you bringing to the table, and not more of what can we teach each other. And I think that's a really important question to ask moving forward in any conference and in any session, in any convening, any community organizing that we're going to do. Are we leading with love? What are people going to take away from this session? How are people going to leave, right? Because how are people even showing up into this space? And that will usually determine how even the people that are surrounded in that space are feeling. So yeah, that was an interesting takeaway. Another takeaway is the need to continue insisting on intersectional feminist practices and the inclusion of all people, right? Let's ask ourselves, like, who in this room is the most vulnerable? Who is the most marginalized? And have they been considered? Because the minute that that person is considered protected and valued, then there's going to be room for everybody else to be included, valued, loved, and to leave the space having experienced something that really makes a difference. What are my recommendations for the future? My recommendations are basically the opposite of everything that I've already mentioned. I think especially if we are going to try to position ourselves as people that are queer inclusive, then let's ensure that the way that queer people are actually experiencing these spaces is safe and is meaningful. Let's not have queer people coming together into a space and being like, wow, I'm so disappointed. Wow, I've never been to an international conference before, but I can't believe this shit. Because verbatim, those were some of the testimonies that I personally heard out of my own ears, right? So there's always going to be something that can be improved around that. But in general, I would say that the concept of WD altogether is a fantastic concept, because there are simply not enough convenings of people that are working in feminist practice, of people that are working in gender. So these spaces are necessary, which is why it is so well funded, right? But let's be intentional and let's be critical when we are looking at the ways that we are being given money and then how we are then expected to organize the community, mobilize people, the proportions of the sessions, the proportions of the topics of conversation, the way that people are represented in the panels. All of that stuff is really, really, really important. That being said, that was my experience at WD 2023. And let's see what happens at the next one. And maybe let's hear a little bit from other people who attended.
My Women Deliver experience was very interesting. Interesting in the fact that, like, I've been into very high level, and high level we mean like a diplomatic, presidential, ministerial representation kind of conferences that then bring civil society and activists. And you can tell structurally it's trying to be politically correct. But what I really loved was like networking and learning what organizations are doing, because Women Deliver is like social reproductive health rights and gender-based violence is not a space I work directly in. So it was really important for me then to come with my work background, which focuses on tech and innovation, into this space and learn and see what people are doing, how they feel about technology, and take away notes for myself to be like, okay, fine, if we're going to intervene, this is what we're going to do. Then on a personal level, it was also revitalizing for me, because it's always great to really see how people are connecting back to community, connecting in communities that they work with, participating in new types of way of engagement, just being in a space of learning. Because my purpose of going to Women Deliver was I went to learn. It was part of my professional development. And I really just was just there to be like, so what are people doing? So I was really excited, and that was my overall experience of Women Deliver.
So what I found challenging about Women Deliver was that the space was overly packed. The multiple sessions that were happening on the side, people needing to arrive. It was truly a four or five day event, not a 2 day main event. I felt like feminism had been co-opted into the space. Like, it was really a women's rights meeting at like high level, and then when you were in the networking spaces engaging with people, you were meeting other feminists. And also my biggest challenge with Women Deliver was, and I've seen this in other conference spaces that pretend to be inclusive, is the exclusion of queer folks, right? Like, their sessions were not in the main hall, happening at 7 a.m. in some off location place. Their tags were written other instead of their pronouns. So that for me was actually kind of like a very big reflection of the idea of trying to be inclusive without really being inclusive. So inclusively exclusive, if that's a term. And that for me was, it wasn't as much as a shock of like, what are they doing? But it was kind of like, you know, same style, same approach in other global conferences. Only difference is because it's Women Deliver, the expectation was a little bit higher. But again, this is like my first women's rights, women's focused conference at that level. So maybe I also, you know, stand corrected to actually say, for people to actually say to me, I shouldn't even have expected that much just because it's Women Deliver. And also, I actually shouldn't have expected that much because it's Women Deliver, because of Women's Deliver's history, right? The reason why they have the current CEO lead is because of the racist, structural racism that existed in the organization. But you can remove a person, but has the structure shifted? And I think that for me is an area of query. And also, I really, really found it so problematic that like African feminist concerns around the leadership at the opening panel were responded to with a tweet, like, we'll look into it. And then when the Hungarian president spoke and there was an uproar for, I would only say feminists who identifying white bodies, there was a response that warranted a whole newsletter, and the article has also been actually picked up by The Guardian. So that for me was really telling of kind of like who is valued, or rather how people are valued. African feminists are valued of like, look, we gathered all of them. White feminists are valued as their thoughts matter, and therefore we're going to respond to whatever needs they have.
Hello everyone, my name is Mary Liz Biubo, a human rights activist and defender who identifies as a Black, queer, radical, angry, intersectional feminist from Nairobi, Kenya, also one of the co-founders of the Queer Republic. My experience about Women Deliver, I think all round, in a nutshell, in one statement, I'd say Women Deliver is not a feminist space, and it will take a while to make it a feminist space. The reason I say this with all the confidence is the fact that with feminism, you don't get room to cherry pick. You get room to specialize. You get room to say, I work particularly on LGBTQ rights, but that means you automatically become an ally to all other rights of these other people. And I think one of the biggest red flags was the fact that my first interactions with so many people were the uncomfortability to have conversations about LGBTQ people, but also generally them being homophobic, seasonal homophobes that we know, or first interaction conversation just makes you see through them and realizing that they're actually homophobes. And so that happened. Outside of these interactions, one of the very first things that really happened to a lot of queer people who uses pronoun she, they, their name tags came with other instead of their pronouns. And that is a huge thing, because I think one of the bare minimums of identifying people nowadays is to understand whether someone is cis heterosexual, whether someone is queer, whether someone is non-binary, what pronouns they use. Very, very important, because erasure happens in that way, where you erase people by not identifying them as who they are, but identifying them as who you perceive them to be. And so that was icky for me. And then when the issue was followed up, one of the queer people who followed up on the issue ended up being the only one whose tag was changed, but there was no actual importance that was placed on everyone whose tag was printed wrongly. There was no callback for all the tags that were written wrongly, for Women Deliver to take accountability and responsibility and say, you know, we do apologize for that happening, and to correct that and ensure you move across the conference for the week that you'll be here with the confidence that you'll be identified as who you are. Please bring back your name tag so that we can be able to reprint in ways that identify you as a person. Now, two things. For this one person to have their tag changed shows you it's changeable. So whatever action they took that didn't allow for everyone who had a problem with their tag to be taken back shows you the lack of intention for them to do something right, for them to protect LGBTQ people in that way. The second thing is what happened during the opening ceremony, where President Novak was part of the opening ceremony. Even in the recent past, President Novak has been known to not be a champion for SRH, has been known to be anti-gender rights, has been known to be anti-LGBTQ, and for a conference that said they will provide safety for LGBTQ people, putting in the same room a victim of abuse with their perpetrator is not protecting them. And when we tried to follow up on the same, I think some of the statements that I read that came out were the Rwandan government was in charge of ensuring who is in the guest list and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, the conference was for Women Deliver. Even if the Rwandan government is taking part on that, that should have been one of the non-negotiables. You don't bring people who are gonna abuse or have been known to be abusers of a specific group of people, because of course re-traumatizing is going to happen, but also it's gonna really question your intention with this specific group of people. And for me, having seen that and having seen that take action and seeing absolutely nothing being done in that moment, because I'm a believer of calling out something when it's happening. President Novak should have been removed from the platform. She should have not been let to speak to begin with. She should have been told to leave the premises and be taken back to wherever safety space that the Rwandan government would have chosen for the person, but they shouldn't have been in a room that claims to be a safe space for sexual and gender minorities. And so for me, that was a big red flag. Another thing was, in that same opening ceremony, we had Macky Sall, who now with everything that happened after, where he was congratulating Museveni on the work that he's doing in Uganda, even when we know recently what was passed into law was the anti-homosexuality bill that is rendering queer people in Uganda homeless and unsafe and all that kind of stuff. To have someone come into the opening ceremony having had the grievances that queer people are experiencing, some of which were highlighted ever so eloquently by Mama Pumzile, her being the former director for UN Women, and to have the same person being in that space and going to say these same things to Museveni and congratulating Museveni shows you how easy it is to throw queer people under the bus, to not protect queer people. And I think in a nutshell, that is what has been happening in different human rights plus feminist movements, where a lot of times the association queer people experience from the movement is only tokenized. They associate themselves with us when they want to get something from us. But other than that, they will throw us under the bus anytime, any day, anywhere, anyhow. They wouldn't even think twice about it. And for me, that is very scary. For me, that is something to be put into consideration. For me, that is something to talk about hugely, because then that is that it's a talk about our lives. It's our lives you're co-opting. It's our lives you're making look like they're not important. Yeah. But also one of the things that I observed whenever we were having conversations about LGBTQ people and that anti-gender movements, most of the time these meetings were either very early in the morning or very late in the evening. And call it what it may be, but I feel like if you're intentionally including people, if you're intentionally about inclusion, intentional about inclusion, then you would definitely put these sessions during daytime where people, most people can attend. Because like for me as an example, I used to leave my hotel very early in the morning and come back very late at night because I had things to do right through the day, right? And most of the time during the day, the meetings that were happening were meetings that do not speak life to the existence of queer people across Africa. And so while I will attend them, I will not attend them with any specific interest because there's not much there is to say about my existence as a queer person in meetings like that. Fair enough, because everyone deserves that airspace, but where was the balance so that queer people, more queer people, can have conversations that are attended by the biggest populations that are at the convention center during the day so that more people can be able to learn? Because as I said at the beginning, Women Deliver is not a feminist space. It would have been a good opportunity for many people to learn what feminism was all about. But also in a nutshell and in general, while my first time experience was what it was, I will say it only painted a picture of the more work we need to do as a community, because we are really trading in difficult spaces. We are working with people who claim to be allies, but they're not. And for me, I think one of the things after the Uganda Anti-Homosexuality Bill and what is going currently in the country with the Family Protection Bill, I think I have discovered one thing, and in that thing, I said one thing. I discovered that allies only want to be allies when it's convenient. And so with that, my call is, if you can't be an ally even when it's difficult for us, then shut the fuck up and stay away from us, because we are already having to live through a lot of difficult times as queer people. We are having to negotiate our very existence with systems that we pay taxes to. And so it's very difficult for me to also know that not only am I doing that with my government, I also have to do that with someone who benefits from saying they work with me, but really they don't. They're happy to oppress me any arising chance they get. And so my call to Women Deliver is do better. Do better. If you're gonna claim to be a feminist organization, if you're gonna claim to be a human rights organization, you do better and know that when you speak about human beings, queer people are human beings too. And if you can't come up with ways in which can protect their humanity and their existence, then also you stay the fuck away from queer people and shut the fuck up and leave us out, so that we know Women Deliver is not safe, other than bringing us to places that are not necessarily safe and lying to us that you'll protect us.
Hi, I'm Michelle from Zimbabwe, and my experience at Women Deliver was basically just me realizing that the people who convene at Women Deliver are all these non-governmental organizations. So there's no policy influencing that is happening. It's just NGOs meeting. Also, I think as a space, Women Deliver does not really do anything. It does not contribute much towards policy change, because it's just people in civil society meeting up and telling each other what they're doing and the recommendations. But who are they giving the recommendations to? No one knows. So people are just, it felt like people were just ticking their boxes in terms of deliverables, in terms of numbers, and maybe networking. But I'm not really sure. I'm still yet to know who the women were delivering to and what they were delivering. On top of that, I also did not like the fact that the Hungarian president was there. I mean, it shows that she's an example of a woman who tells you, or who represents the fact that not every female is a feminist. She said a lot of statements that were very problematic, and for me, it didn't sit well with me. For Women Deliver, as much as they can say that they had nothing to do with it, it was the Rwandan government that did that, that allowed for her to come and be a speaker. Of all the women in the world, of all the female leaders that we have, she was not the right one to speak in that space. I think Women Deliver could have, at the very least, tried to reason with the Rwandan government to say that they do not want her to speak, because she spoke about issues around being pro-family. And this is someone who we all know stands for stuff like women do not deserve equal pay or pay raises because they should be at home, being homemakers. How you're president and these are your sentiments. So for me, I think that was also problematic. There was very clear exclusion of certain marginalized key populations within Women Deliver. So I think those are some of my reflections. I did like the fact that it gave us also a chance to network and meet other people. Like I said, the networking part was the good thing about Women Deliver, but apart from that, most of it was very problematic, and hopefully these are things that they address, because, you know, when it comes to spaces like the UN Commission on the Status of Women or the UNCPD, government stakeholders are mobilized, they're funded to go and to attend. These are the policy makers, and they're also given spaces where they can speak to people. But with Women Deliver, there was nothing like that. So CSOs did not have that incentive to say that this will contribute towards policy change. And to this end, we must also include people from the Gender Directorate, people from Women's Affairs and whatnot, so that they can take these issues from their country representatives and take them back to their country so that they can change policies. There was no incentive for that. There was no space for the government. So as much as we may frown upon having the government within these spaces, everything that we're doing, advocacy for policy change, it all goes down to them. So if we're going to do advocacy amongst ourselves, there's nothing that we're doing. So those are my sentiments.
We'll catch you in the next episode. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. Again, if you want to see more content around WD 2023, you can go on my TikTok. A link will be in the episode notes, and we will catch you on the next episode. If you're here for the first time, hoping that this is not the last time that you are here. So shout out to feminism, shout out to the queer, shout out to the girls, the gays, and shout out to being unapologetically ourselves in every single space that we show up in.